CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 401. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. I'm Adam, you're Matt. What's up?
What is up? What's going on, everybody?
Not too much. You know what I did this weekend?
I don't know what you did this weekend.
Well, several things, but among those things, I watched two XFL games of the four games. Not the entire games, but good chunks of two XFL games.
Yep.
To be fair, I was a little sick under the weather, so, but still, I enjoyed watching the games. I'm now just trying to decide who my team is.
So my team is the Houston Roughnecks.
Of course it is.
As you may have guessed.
Yeah.
Shocker. But I only caught like the fourth quarter of their game because I was at a lacrosse tournament in College Station.
I've heard of College Station, home of the Aggies.
I was on campus at Texas A&M University.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So I am trying to decide between the St. Louis Battlehawks, because they're just closest to Wichita,
or the
Seattle Dragons, because they're dragons.
Now, wait a minute. You live in Kansas, right?
Yeah, it's that's where St. Louis
there
is.
There's not a team from like one of the big cities in Kansas, like Kansas City or somewhere?
No, unfortunately not.
There's not a team in Kansas City, Kansas?
There's not a team in Kansas City, Kansas, or much in Kansas City, Kansas either.
Okay.
It's quite small. but anyway, I enjoyed it. It was like a mediocre college game. And by mediocre, I don't mean quality of the game. Like watching a good MAC game, right? Good MAC conference, Middle American.
Well, the Houston Roughnecks game had a reported crowd of 18,000 people. They sold out of all the merchandise at the merchandise cart. And their starting center is Tejon Caroma.
Yeah, which is cool. And the Battlehawks had quite a big crowd because, you know, they haven't had... they were on the road with the Renegades, weren't they? They're saying they're going to have... That's what they were saying. That they anticipate having like 20-something thousand for their home opener because they don't have a professional football team anymore, right? So the Battlehawks are the only show in town. We decided on Battlehawks. I think we're going to stick with our Middle American roots at this point.
Well, if you're looking for a birthday present for me, feel free to give me some Houston Roughnecks gear.
Okay, all right. And vice versa. So, Matt, let's jump into this week's tweet bag. Matt, let's jump into this week's tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Okay, we are having...
I'm laughing now.
We're having some connection issues.
I can't do it. I'm laughing now.
So we'll see how well this
does.
And
now I'm laughing because...
Because something. You're laughing for some reason, but we never heard it.
I don't know. I keep losing you too. I'm laughing because talk and then you're gapped out and then it's choppy. Like, it's
beep,
funny.
Beep, 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 beep. Well, let's...
And I said tweet bag 47 and you didn't... One of them.
Oh, good. All right. Well, let's do the tweet bag. And the first one is from Spencer Thurman off of Facebook. And if you want to join the conversation on Facebook, you could, of course, do that at facebook.com/riseandshout. Spencer says, loved the 400th episode, which, by the way, that may be the funnest episode we've ever had. Is that possible?
It was super fun.
Super fun. So if you missed that, go back and listen to it. It's timeless. Timeless, really. Really, the only thing that would have made it better was more baseball talk. If I remember right, Spencer Thurman's a fan of the Texas team that doesn't cheat, right?
Oh, shots fired.
Shots fired. Sorry, Astros fans, including Matt. I'd like to add a number 11 greatest part of the episode. When Adam asks Matt a question, which presumably was on the agenda that we hear them talk about, And there's a long pause when Matt finally says, I'll really have to think about that. Really, Matt? You had one job. Ha ha, hashtag tweetbag, more of a hashtag tweet commentary. Matt, do you have any response to Spencer Thurman's commentary?
So I'm going to say at least once a show, you ask me a question that was not on the agenda. Okay, that's a thing.
At least once a show, usually more than once.
And then sometimes as we go over the agenda beforehand, I miss this part. And then you ask me a question, and I'm like, I did not think about this in advance. I don't have a good answer. Or there have been times where you change the wording of the question, and you like, and so now my answer is no longer interesting or relevant. So that happens too sometimes. And sometimes I just draw a blank. You know what I mean? Like, this is a tough job.
This is a tough job. Very hard. Very hard. Podcasting is not for the faint of heart, as they say.
No, not at all.
So the next question comes from Eric. That's at Eric or Eric on Twitter. And you can, of course, tweet at us at BYU_RiseShot. And this is the first of two questions from Eric or Eric. And the first one is about movies. So he said the Harley Quinn movie was amazeballs. Can I say that on the show? Amazeballs?
You just did. It's the thing that people still say in 2020.
That's it. That is. Joaquin Phoenix's Oscar for Joker made me think about shared MCU and crossovers. Can you imagine a Margot Robbie, Joaquin Phoenix, Joker, Harley movie? Matt, can you imagine such a thing? I didn't see Joker yet. And that's not me joking about not seeing an R-rated movie. I actually haven't seen Joker.
I could absolutely see the crossover here, though.
I was not a fan of Jared Leto's, or Leto, or however you say his last name, Joker in Suicide Squad. So, probably. But they're not going to do that, by the way.
No, I don't think they can.
Yeah, I don't think
so. But it's definitely a cool idea, Eric or Eric.
Eric or Eric. Now, he says, what about a movie crossover? Which one of these two would be more awesome, Matt? Avengers versus the X-Men or Avengers versus Justice League? Which, of course, Avengers versus X-Men can happen now because Disney bought Fox. Avengers versus Justice League will never happen. But we don't have to worry about reality. Which one?
No, Disney buys DC Comics.
That's not going to happen. Warner Brothers.
They're going to own everything. They're going to own everything.
Possible. But which one would you rather see?
Avengers and X-Men, but I'm very partial to the X-Men characters. That was like my favorite group of superheroes growing up.
You remember that song?
Oh, I watched that. I don't know how many episodes of that cartoon I've watched.
It's on Disney Plus.
I've seen all the episodes.
Go watch it with your kids. I'm going to say Avengers versus Justice League only because... And I do love the X-Men. I think there would be some cool battle matchups if they were to fight. You know, Thor, Superman. Batman and, I don't know, pick one of the good fighters, like Black Panther. Black Panther's kind of
Who's going to fight strong. Aquaman?
Who's going to fight Aquaman? No one, because Aquaman's lame. So we don't want him. Wonder Woman versus, man, I don't know, Captain Marvel? That'd be a tough one. And Captain America. Maybe Captain America versus Batman. Maybe that'd be good.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
That'd be a good one. You know, Captain America is super strong-ish, right? Like, super stronger. But not, like, over the top, like, you know, like Thor or Hulk.
So who's fighting? So you say Thor and Superman?
Well, here's the thing. Like, the only person that could take the Hulk is Superman, right? On the Justice League side, at least of the major team. So maybe that would have to be the matchup. I don't know. Endless possibilities, Eric or Eric. All right, next question. Also movie related. This comes from our ongoing discussion of whose filmography or filmology or films would you take with you to a desert island? Jens Linton on Twitter at Jens S. Linton, or Jens Linton, not Jen S. Linton. Are you sure Harrison Ford or Liam Neeson movies would be the better choice to take to a desert island versus, I mean, we had talked about lots of people. But let's play that out. Harrison Ford, that's a pretty good pick. Didn't we talk about Harrison Ford once in this discussion?
I thought we did, because I thought the movie The Fugitive came up.
I thought so, too. We've talked about it on multiple episodes, so now I'm losing track. But, I mean, obviously you get a bunch of Star Wars movies. You get, you know, the Indiana Jones. You get stuff like The Fugitive. You get a few dramas thrown in there, you know, for good
measure.
You get
Anchorman 2.
He said Anchorman 2?
Apparently.
I think you just made that up.
He plays a character called Mac, named Mac Tannen in Anchorman 2.
Oh, yes, he does. Yes. Okay. So Liam Neeson's an interesting one, right? Because you get a bunch of action movies. You get, do you count if his voice is in the background? You get a few Star Wars movies.
Yeah, we decided that voiceover counts.
Voiceover counts. You get, like, some weird things, like a couple of Christmas movies, Ted 2, obviously the Taken franchise.
In Ted 2, I forgot. How did I forget that?
I haven't actually
because I've never
movies.
Seen it. That's why.
Have you seen it?
Ted 2?
Or have you seen either of the Ted?
I don't know that I've seen Ted 2. I think I did see the first one.
Yeah. Obviously, you get The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight stuff, or Batman Begins, and he does make an appearance in The Dark Knight too, right? In like The Dark Knight Rises, in like a flashback, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, you got some cool stuff from Liam Neeson. I don't know
and it's a ton of things. It's a ton of things. A
ton of movies. The Chronicles of Narnia, because he's Aslan in that. Yeah, I mean,
Schindler's List. I mean,
Schindler's List.
The spectrum is really remarkable.
Yeah. And I know he's now trying to go away from action movies. I think he feels like he's been pigeonholed a little bit.
Well, the problem is that he has a very special set of skills.
That's true.
So people want to take advantage of that special set of skills the problem.
And he's got a couple overlaps, at least one, with K-19, The Widowmaker, with Harrison Ford. So you got a little overlap. Oh, you get, that's right, that version that he did of Les Mis.
Mm-hmm.
Non-singing one. Yeah, wow.
Gangs
of New York. You get a lot of, what's that superhero one? He was the Shadow, not the Shadow, Darkman.
Oh, yeah, Darkman.
Yeah, so you get...
Michael Collins.
It's a solid, you've got, Jens, you've got, Liam Neeson is a solid choice.
Yeah, Liam Neeson's is really a solid choice. All right. Harrison Ford's not a bad choice either.
Oh, Harrison Ford's an excellent choice as well. So we've got two tweet bag questions from CougarFan82 on Twitter. I'm going to do them in reverse order only because it'll make sense when I do it. And we'll come back to his in a second. The first one because we're going to do the second one. This is like me explaining the answering machine game.
Yeah, because the funny thing is I'm the only person who knows what order you've written these on the agenda.
Yeah, but CougarFan82 will know which order he submitted them. So this is really for him.
I guess that's true. That's true. And when I produce a long pause at the end of the first one of these questions, now everybody will know it's because you're doing them out of order.
Correct. All right. So also Call of the Wild, he says, also because this was his
second
question.
This is the order that they were on the agenda.
I'm telling you, I put them on the agenda in opposite order of that he gave them to us. That's what I just told you.
This is very confusing.
Start paying attention, Mangum. All right. So Call of the Wild with Harrison Ford is coming out next week. Classic book from my childhood. Me as well. I love Call of the Wild. Did you read that as a kid?
Great book.
Yeah, love Call of the Wild. Worth the price of admission? The answer is yes.
That's a definite affirmative.
So he also has some cool hashtags. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag climb on end, hashtag 401 and climbing. Nice, Cougar Fan 82. And we'll get back to that hashtag in a minute. Yes, I want to see it. I don't know if I'll see it in the theater or not. I probably will.
I'm going to try and take one or all of my kids to go see it.
Yeah, I love that movie. That book was one I just really, really loved as a kid. All right.
It's required reading in some grade.
I had read it, I think, before.
You're such a nerd.
Yeah, and then I read it again.
You're such a nerd. I've read that
book probably three times, would be my guess.
Such a nerd. Nerd alert.
Yeah, thanks. 1982 called. They'd like that phrase back. Cougar Fan 82. See where I went with that? All right. Our nephew, David, at David Bangham on Twitter, says, thoughts on Cosmo's dunk this week. Did you see Cosmo's dunk from the three-point line?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Now, in case people haven't seen this, they throw him from the three-point line, which I'm not sure makes it less remarkable than him jumping from the three-point line. Maybe. But throwing...
A group of people threw another adult from the three-point line
to
far
dunk.
Enough for them to dunk it.
Amazing!
Yeah, it's remarkable.
Now, what makes me a little sad here, Matt, is I'm pretty sure that the best highlights from BYU sports over the last decade have been Cosmo and the Cougarettes.
Well, Cosmo's clearly been the most viral.
Yeah. I mean, and that is, actually, I should say, we've had some great volleyball highlights and other things, right? So, anyway. So sticking with the basketball, Cougar Fan 82, this was his first question. He says,
Cougar Fan 82, but that's cool.
Cougar Fan. Yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. What is the single biggest reason for the three-point a-palooza this year? And I put in the because you have to put in the three-point palooza. You got to put a-palooza, right? Anyway.
I don't know what rules are there.
Coaching, seniors, annex, offense, etc. Any chance this pace can keep up into the tourney? Hashtag tweetbag. Hashtag climb on in. Hashtag 401 and climbing. Matt? What say you?
Well, I think it's coaching. It's the offense that Pope is trying to run.
I think it's a combination of things, but the biggest reason has got to be coaching. I mean, you added Toulson, right? So you added a elite three-point shooter. You also had a few guys that just didn't shoot well last year that were just, I mean, they were going to come back to the mean, right? TJ Haas is not a bad three-point shooter. We already knew that. So, but I'm going to say, I'm with you, I'm coaching. I don't think this changes, do you?
No, do I think the pace slows?
No, I don't think it slows.
No, because you know what they're not going to do is change what the offense is doing.
No.
It's especially right now. I mean, things are kind of working. You're clicking. You're going into a stretch of the schedule where you have an opportunity to put a real solid string of wins together. It's really a remarkable thing. But one of the things I do want to point out, right, is if you look at the 2018-2019 statistics for BYU men's basketball, you look at three-point shooting. Okay, so at the end of the season, if I go down this list, I've got one player who had taken over 150 three-point shots, and it was TJ Haas.
All right. Okay.
So, and that's it. That's in the end of the season. So today, February 11th of this season, you have two players in range of 150 three-point shots already. And it's TJ Haas and Jake Toulson. And they're shooting 490 and 382 and 490 respectively from beyond the arc. So that it's just a shift in the way we're playing basketball. And obviously the addition of Toulson, as you pointed out, is maybe that's what enables this to happen, but we're shooting the three a lot more than we were a year ago.
Well, and most of that is almost, I should say almost all of it. I mean, it really comes down to four players, right? it's Seljaas, Toulson, Haas, and Barcelo, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, other guys are taking threes. Obviously, Childs is taking, how many a game is he taking? He's averaging over two a game. But Toulson is 5.5, Haas 5, Barcelo over 3, Seljaas over 3, and then you got guys like Harding and Nixon taking a couple of game too, right? I mean,
yep.
Everybody's shooting threes, and the remarkable thing is the percentage, right? We're 30th in the country in attempts and first in percentage, shooting 43% from the field, from the three-point line. It's quite remarkable, the turnaround from last year. It's amazing.
But I think I think a large part of it is coaching. But if you look down at if you look at the statistics, the two players who are really pulling that number up from on a percentage basis are two new guys, right? So now Yoeli Childs, his percentage is really high, but he's not throwing as many of them up as everybody else. But I feel like we have a couple of these players in here because we have Pope. Pope went and found the guys that he wanted to run, the system that he wanted to run, and it's paying off.
Yeah. Well, Toulson's shooting 50% for the 3-point line, right? And taking a ton of shots. I mean, it's quite remarkable. And if you look at Haas shot 35% last year, 38% this year, and 31% his sophomore year. Remember, he just couldn't buy a three-pointer that year. But he was 40% shooter his freshman year, right? So this guy's a decent three-point shooter. He's not elite, though, like Toulson. And maybe Barcelo. Barcelo doesn't chuck up as many, but he's not elite.
But he's
good.
He's hitting half of them.
Oh, Barcelo's doing great. I'm comfortable anytime he wants to throw up a three-pointer that's at least somewhat open. And Toulson, whatever you want, dude. Because sometimes he pulls
green,
up, and I'm like,
green light.
The guy's in your face. Oh, never mind. It went in. So that's good. So it's an amazing turnaround. Now, Wade Hillam on Facebook has a, I think, related question. Here's what he says. I know Gavin Baxter played only a few minutes, but I really like his size, defense, and rebounding, which will be desperately needed in the tournaments. We obviously shoot well, but it's also obvious that when Yoeli sits, we have problems around the rim. And I think that is, you can just go back and look at those games before. You don't have to, I mean, when he sits, definitely, but go back and look at before he joined the team, right? And some of those games where we lost, where that was the biggest issue. Smart move by him, meaning Gavin Baxter and Pope, to pull the red shirt and play him this year, in my opinion, might be the last missing piece to something really special. Matt, what do you think about Gavin Baxter's return to late season return to the Cougars?
I'm excited about it. I think it's a little early to... It's a little early to determine some of what Wade's asking about in this question, right?
Sure.
But I do believe he brings tools that we need. Now, whether or not he's the last piece missing to create something really special here, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. And I think it's going to be a while before we know whether or not that's true, i.e. the last game of the season / some tournament play. But everybody likes this guy. He showed some real promise. Getting him back on the floor is a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, last year his PER was one of the top five or six on the team, right, as a freshman. And he does things that we don't have a lot of. So to Wade's point, I mean, he's not duplicative, right? If it was a wing guy that shot threes, quite frankly, there's no minutes, right? So I think... In that case, they probably say just keep the red shirt and move on. But I'm never big on keeping the red shirt. If you think they can help now, go do it now, right? Don't save it for next year because you don't know what next year's going to look like, right?
Yeah, you just go win games.
Go win games now. And I think that's fantastic that they've decided to do it that way. And I think it's smart. Like you, I'm hopeful that he plays a massive role here towards the end of the season. But we're talking about a guy that's played now a grand total of 3 minutes, right? It's hard to know what he'll be able to give. He's got to get back into full shape. But, man, I really liked him last year. So I thought he was one of the most positive things about a season that was not that positive, right?
Yep.
So Eric or Eric makes a return from earlier in the show and says, number one Baylor plays number 14 West Virginia and Oklahoma before hosting number three Kansas on February 22nd. Will Gonzaga be number one when BYU hosts them on February 22nd? And what percent chance do we get game day in Provo for that game? So, Matt, what are you going to take the field or Gonzaga for number one come February 22nd?
I'm taking the Zags. I'm taking the Zags.
I think I'm taking the Zags as well. Yes. Yes, I think I'm going to take the Zags.
Well, and what's interesting about the second part of this question is, at that point in time, BYU could very well be an AP top 25 team.
Yes, they could.
So now you've got a matchup between the number one team in the country and a top 25 team to end the regular season.
Yeah,
Other conferences that might produce an interesting matchup like that would be like the Big Ten.
Right.
Right. I mean, but what if you just kind of look down the list right now? What other conference might produce that? I guess the ACC might produce an interesting matchup like that. But other than that, I mean, there's not a lot of conference play where you have that potential.
Yeah, and BYU right now in the AP poll, if you just stretched it out, we're what, 26, 27, 28, 29th. And in the coaches' poll, I think we're about the same. So there's a very good chance, right? Because you just have to win some of these cupcakes. And right now, the game against San Francisco on Saturday, I saw a few people on Twitter, and I totally get it. They were like disappointed because we could have blown them out of the gym, right? And it ended up getting somewhat close towards the end. But I like games like that, quite frankly, because I think there is some value to be gained from experience to have, to lose a big lead but not cough up the game, right? To know that, to not panic. And they didn't panic, right? And by the way, San Francisco's not a terrible team. I think some people on Twitter were like, oh my gosh, we're letting this terrible. San Francisco's a mediocre team. There's a difference, and a very meaningful one, right? Because mediocre teams beat good teams sometimes, right? And San Francisco already beat BYU once already this year, right? I don't know if they beat great teams very often, but we're not a great team, right? We're a good team, maybe even a very good team. And I thought Saturday made me feel better about the Cougars, not worse.
I'm not – listen, they let them get, what, within seven there towards the end. I'm not freaking out about a time where you were up by – severe double digits, let it get down to a single digit lead, and then ended up winning by 14.
Well, like he rested for some massive minutes there in the second half, which, by the way, because we're playing such a tight rotation right now, giving these guys some minutes off is not a terrible idea.
No, it's actually a good idea. And that's the other thing that people, need to realize. I think you make a really good point, is that we've been playing this, really small nucleus of players. And if you look at what happened with the rotation, a lot of the guys were sitting down. So, yeah, it got a little bit close. It's going to be fine.
It's okay. I mean, I get it why, you'd rather blow them out. But it's not like our KenPom or whatever ratings really need that much help at this point. The only
and that blowout wasn't going to do anything for you anyway.
No, I mean, tiny, decimals, right? The thing that's going to hurt or help us is you beat Gonzaga, you're going to get a massive bump, right? And if you lose to anybody else between now and the end of the season, you're going to have a, not a devastating drop, but a very significant one, right? I don't think
that's way more powerful.
Yeah, I don't think, by the way, I don't think one loss to one of those teams, if it's on the road, necessarily knocks us out of the NCAA tournament. I think people are like, oh, if we lose one more, we're on the edge. We're not on the edge. We're not a bubble team right now. I think that moves us back towards that bubble land. Right now, we are a solid. Everybody has us in today. I haven't seen a single projection with us on the bubble.
Yeah, if it happens today, we're in. We're going.
Yeah, if it happens today, we're in. We don't need to beat Gonzaga. And quite frankly, I don't even know in the WCC tournament if you have to have a great showing either. I think you just have to have an okay showing in the tournament. And you know, St. Mary's and us are going to be in. And obviously Gonzaga's in already. I mean, they don't even have to worry at this point. I can't imagine a scenario where they don't. And if you look at, obviously, St. Mary's has had two bad conference losses, and we've only had one. It's crazy to me that right now we're the clear number two in the conference.
That is crazy.
Because I thought our best case scenario was three and bubble team, maybe. That's like your upside. And obviously we were wrong, right? I mean, because that was not the upside. The upside is, I think, where we're at. Matt, we're going to finish today, or at least spend a big chunk of the time talking about our big why, which is football recruiting. So football recruiting is weird now because you have that early signing period. We talked about a lot of the class then, and we're not going to get into details because there wasn't a lot of change between now and then. A couple of things flipped, if you will. But Jeremy Ashton via email, and of course you want to email the show, you can do it by emailing us at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Jeremy had this to say. He said, Jay Drew's recent article, and now this is a week or so old, so not that recent, on BYU football recruiting made the case that we are way down on a national basis. That, you don't need to make the case. It's just a fact, right? Like, we are way down on a national basis versus historicals. So is this the reality of being a non-P5 school with a strict honor code? Matt, would you like first crack at Jeremy's question?
I don't think that piece is really that hard. Yeah, it is the reality of being a non-P5 school with a strict honor code.
No, it's not.
I mean, even if, you know, Kalani is a genius recruiter, the pool of potential athletes that are going to come to BYU, maybe you can grow that pool a little bit. But it's never going to look the same as other schools or as schools that we even aspire to be like. It's never, and I would even go far as to say today, the pool is not the same as the athletes that the University of Utah is going to recruit in. It's just not the same.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if it changes if you put BYU in a P5 conference, how much does that change? I think it changes some, but I still think there's a difference.
That's just the
reality of it. Like the bread and butter has got to be, Satake's got to go find those underrated guys that want to be at BYU and coach them into playing beyond their potential, or maybe they're just underrated and just he brings them in and they play to their actual potential. And then he's got to identify the marginal guys that have some affiliation or interest with BYU and are maybe getting recruited to go somewhere else and get them to choose to come to BYU, like a Kyle Van Noy type of situation, right?
Yeah.
Where he's got some options, clearly a really talented kid, but, you know, for whatever reason, was all in on coming to BYU even after he had an opportunity to maybe go somewhere else and was probably advised by people to go somewhere else. But that's the way you get successful recruiting at BYU. It's never going to look like one of these P5 schools that doesn't have the honor code to work around.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's all true, but I think that's irrelevant to what Jay Drew's article, which is the drop. Like, why the drop? We used to be a team that recruited, our ratings were somewhere between 50 and 65, 70. And now we're looking at more like 80. Why the drop, right? Yes, everything you said is true. We are never going to be a top 30 recruiting program for all the things you said. And Utah just did, right, get a top 30 ranking. Right, we're never going to be that school. But why the drop since Kalani came aboard? I mean, every class he's had except for the first one, which, by the way, wasn't really his, right? It was mostly Broncos and his staff's anyway. Every ranking he has had that was his is lower than any ranking Bronco ever had in his entire tenure. So my question, and maybe this is where Jeremy's going, but my question really is, what the freak has happened? Like, what changed between Broncos' tenure and his? Because we were a P5 school before, and we had the honor code before. So why are these classes so much lower than they were before? And everything you said is true. Like, he's got to find those gems. He's got to get a couple of studs, you know, and convince them to come to BYU when they have other options. All those things are true. I just don't understand why these rankings have gone down. Kalani was supposed to be a stud recruiter. I'll tell you right now, I want Bronco back recruiting. He was better. His staff was better.
And I'm trying to pull up some more numbers to back up what I'm about to say, and people aren't going to like it, and you may not like it. So you're saying this is the worst recruiting class than any class Bronco ever had. So this is the worst class that we've had since 2004?
Yeah.
Or earlier, right?
Yeah.
You know what school, not very far away, just checked in with the best recruiting class they've ever had?
No.
The University of Utah.
Oh, yeah. No, these are related.
It's the best recruiting class they've ever had. And so we could look up and see, like, what is the trajectory of BYU, of Utah's recruiting class since Kalani, and then maybe you go back to Independence, or I don't know, maybe you go back to 05 when it was Mendenhall versus Whittingham. But I think that one of the things that we're seeing here is there are guys going to the University of Utah now that may have chosen to go to Utah, to BYU before.
Yeah,
and then on top of that, the University of Utah is clearly getting a bump out of their Pac-12 affiliation. And the bump that they get from Pac-12 affiliation from guys that never would have been BYU guys isn't something we need to lament about. But the guys that BYU would have landed in 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008 that are now choosing to go to the University of Utah, that is going to have a real impact.
We only lost two guys this year, and I don't know that that was ever any different. I hear what you're saying, but I think their bump is coming from, if you look at their class, it's not stud LDS guys. It's guys from California, right? You look at Utah's recruiting class. The reason they're in the top 30 is not because they beat us out for that Richie kid at a Lone Peak or that big offensive lineman. It's because they're getting guys that would have never even talked to the University of Utah a decade and a half ago, right? They just wouldn't have. And yes, head-to-head now, they do have an advantage with some of these good LDS kids. But look at who else we lost. We lost one of the best ones was the Gentry, the offensive lineman, to Virginia. And I wanted to, when I heard that, I wanted to punch Bronco in the face. Dude. Leave Gentry alone, man. Like, he needs to come to BYU, not to Virginia. So, yes, Bronco recruiting some of them in the Utah, that hurts us. I just think, I'll just be honest, this is a hard for me to you know, definitively say it. I just think Satake may not be as good of a recruiter as everybody thought he was. I'm not saying he's terrible, because obviously this program, it's hard to recruit to BYU. I'm just saying, like, one of the things people hated about Bronco was, or they said, was he wasn't a very good recruiter. And, oh, man, we get Satake in here, and he's gonna charm people into coming that didn't come otherwise. There's no evidence that that is happening. I mean, maybe he's getting different people than Bronco's staff would have gotten, but he's certainly not getting a higher quality of volume.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but maybe you're right, right? Maybe it's not as big of an impact coming out of what they're doing up in Salt Lake, but I'm wondering, you know, if I look at the list of some of these guys that they signed this year, and and say I just grab a couple of guys that are return missionaries, right? So you got Hunter Lotulelei, whose brother played at the U and is now in the NFL. So he probably, that guy was always going to go to the U, probably, right? And then you've got, you know, Tanila Pututau, Tennessee Pututau. Like, I don't know if guys like that would have really looked at BYU. I honestly just don't
know.
It's
hard to know.
If they even looked at it.
Yeah.
But my question is, are there guys in that category that 10 years ago would have thought about BYU but aren't even really talking to Satake today?
And that's hard to know. It's hard to know. But here's the thing.
Right.
We can still win with these people, right? Like,
We've done that before.
We've done it before. Boise State, when they made their like climb into the national spotlight, they did it with recruiting classes like the ones we're doing right now, right? They're better now, but they did it with a lot of three-star guys, right? Doing what you're talking about, finding the hidden gems, but also coaching them up, right? Getting guys that had qualities that they valued. My fear is right now, I don't know if we've got the coaching staff that's good enough to make up for this drop in recruiting, right? I don't know. And BYU has this weird delayed effect because of the missions, right? Like, you know, he still has been playing a lot of Broncos guys. And that has now changed, and I don't know that they'll... It's now his team, right? But for a good part of Kalani's time, he was playing Broncos guys, right? Guys came back from missions. So I don't know, man. It's got me a little nervous, but you can still win like this. It's not like the end of the world nervous. But we play a P5 schedule, and we don't have a P5 recruiting team, right? But it's fair to say we play a P5 schedule. So, are you worried? Are you worried, or are you just like, we're good, man?
Am I worried about recruiting long term? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, here's another thing I'm looking at. If you scroll down, and I hate to keep harping on this, but if you scroll down the 2020 class at the University of Utah, okay, mm-hmm. I see Draper, Corner Canyon High School. I see West Jordan, Bingham High School. I see Bountiful, Viewmont High School. I see Riverton, Harriman High School. I see... Salt Lake City Cottonwood, Salt Lake City East. I see Lone Peak. I'll even throw in a Rigby, Idaho. These are all guys, and three or four of those names that I just mentioned are guys that are LDS guys that could have at least like know BYU exists, right? But would be familiar with and could be comfortable in an honor code situation. And that's a lot of people ending up in Salt Lake.
Yeah, but that was always true. But that was always true, right? Like, that's been true at least since the 90s, right? Like, their roster is going to be filled with guys from Utah and LDS guys.
Well, I would hope, right?
But I'm just saying, like, I don't know, and maybe we need somebody, Cougar Insider or Gurney or somebody, to really go through and, like, separate out the LDS recruits and see how much better Utah's doing now than they were 10 years ago with that group, right? Because that would probably answer whether you're right or I'm right, right? And say, well, no, there's a substantial, if you're right, right? There's a substantial increase in the quality, average quality of the LDS recruits that Utah's getting. And that has directly impacted BYU, right? Or, no, I mean, some, but not a ton. What's really impacted BYU is other stuff, right? You know, and again, you tip two or three. The crazy part about all this is you tip two or three of those guys that BYU lost, including Gentry, into that class, and you're talking about a top 70, maybe top 65 class anyway, right? And then we're not even talking about this.
Yep.
Two big recruits could make all that difference. And how close was he to getting some of those guys? I don't know. It's hard to say. But, I mean, it doesn't take a lot, right? You look back and, you know, you take Van Ooy out of that class that he came in, it's a different class without Van Ooy in it, right? You know, and...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Some of these best classes that we had, some of those guys didn't pan out, right? I mean, Jay keeps his class, right? Well, that is Vanoy's class, or was he technically counted? I think he was technically counted as the next one. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'd have to look.
But anyway, so all right.
But the flip side of that is this, right? Is if I look at the 2020 BYU recruiting class, and you think about like the Tyson Williams phenomenon, yeah. right? And you look at this Devontae Henry Cole coming down from Salt Lake, and he looks like he could really be a gamer. I don't know that I'm on the I don't know that I'm Tyson Williams level excited about him yet, but maybe I just need to watch some more film. And if you go down the list though, like the places BYU is going, and if you watch the film on some of these guys like Miles Davis, I'll even throw in a Tate Romney, and a couple of these guys. If you watch the highlights, I mean, there's reason to be excited about these guys they're bringing in, like this Bodie Schoonover, right? If you watch, this is a 3-star kid out of American Fork High School. Like that's a good get for us. I think that kid's gonna translate well to the next level. This is somebody who's getting looks from UCLA, Nebraska, Utah. So I don't want to make it sound like I'm too down on the recruiting that's coming out of Provo. I understand that the numbers aren't great, but there are some kids on this list to be really excited about.
Well, I think the really question becomes depth, right? I think at the top of this, you've got some guys that are really, really good and will be good, and we will love watching them play in both the Navy and the Royal Blue uniforms that they will inevitably play in. I worry about the depth, and we saw that this year, after that tough beginning of the year schedule, and you lost Tyson Williams, and you just didn't have a running back of that quality to do that, right? And yep. I think Jay Drew makes a comment here that I'm going to completely disagree with. He says, that Utah will not miss Devontae Henry Cole. I think that's crap, right? He's been hurt. You had a stud running back that was a workhorse when he was healthy that you didn't need the depth. Typically, most teams need depth at running back. Almost every college team needs depth at running back. Right, so when I hear him say that, they will miss him, and BYU will be happy they have him. And how good will he be? I don't know. Is he depth or is he the a star? We'll see. I mean, he averaged over 5 yards a carry in fairly limited carries, right, in his time at the U. So we'll see. But this class has some studs in it that I'm very excited about. It's the depth piece that I worry about. Right, is do you have guys in that second and third level to come in when the inevitable injuries happen? And that's the part where the coaching, I think, becomes so important. Because the answer is you have guys, right? There are people that will step in. The question is, will they be ready? And have you coached them to go beyond what their star ratings are?
That's the key at BYU.
Yeah, that's the key. Because you hit the nail on the head when you started saying, hey, you got to find some gems and you got to coach them up, right? Like that,
right. That
is the key. And right now, has Satake earned our, not being doubtful on that? I don't think so yet. I don't think so yet.
But do you know who I trust, who I think has earned some respect in that regard, sure, is AJ Stewart, the running backs coach.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
So that's why I wonder, like, maybe I should be more excited about Devontae than I am, right? But
yeah, because like, you remember me last year at this time, I was very skeptical of Tyson Williams.
I was all in from day one.
You were all in from day one. I was not skeptical, maybe even too strong. I just didn't see him as a stud workhorse guy, right? And obviously injuries derailed that. Asukpa, unfortunately, I was dead right on because I looked at his film from Rice. I'm like, I don't think he's super fast or has great vision. And I think that unfortunately played out, right? Tyson Williams, when healthy, is a stud. And proved that, unfortunately, just couldn't, which marred much of his career. Just couldn't stay healthy. So,
well, I'll just say one thing at the end here as we're wrapping this up. I think that the skill that everybody's excited about when they talk about Kalani Sitake's recruiting is the ability to go into somebody's house and convince a kid and his parents that they want their son to go play at his program. And I do believe he has that skill. You know, if you look at, you know, the Zach Wilson flip, you know, and some of these other things, I do think there is some evidence that he has that skill. And if you go back at things he was doing before he came to BYU, he has that skill. But I do feel like, and I know we've hit this point two or three times already, but the what is probably a more important skill for recruiting at BYU is identifying underrated talent.
Yeah. Well, I
and I don't know. Maybe he has that skill or not. We just but I don't think we have enough evidence to come to a conclusion on that yet.
But Bronco closed in houses too. And people were like always like, "Ah, he seems like such a sour guy," but when you read the story, his parents loved him. Not universally, because that's never true. That'll be true with Kalani. You know, yes, there are definitely a few good stories that he has been able to do that, right? And I mean, you see the guy talking and you think, you automatically think, I'd like talking to that guy, right? But like you said, more important at this point is whether he can turn the guys that he's got into better players or find guys that are underrated. I mean, those are the two skills that, quite frankly, if he doesn't have, we're going to have some long seasons in the next two or three. So, anyway, well, thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. We'll be back, I think, next week. I said that last week. We'll see. We'll definitely be back the week after that because we'll be talking about Gonzaga. But regardless, we'll be back soon. Episode 401, maybe not as hilarious, but still decent. I think we did maybe average, maybe below average. Was this our worst podcast in the last 5 years? No.
I'd say it was extra average.
Extra average. It's extra average. That's good. So thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.
Unless your neighbors are University of Utah fans, then you don't need to tell them. I don't think they'd enjoy the show.